Welcome to Black Art is Lit. My name's Nikira Cheney, but you can just call me Nick. I am excited to start this podcast because I am a lover of Black arts. Whether you're talking about poetry, playwriting, just literature in all forms, and performing arts. And I feel like a lot of our historical pieces are either unknown or they're being quickly forgotten. So I felt like one of the ways that I can contribute is to read and talk about those arts, you know, not just some of the more well-known individuals like Zora Neale Hurston, Langston Hughes, W.E.B. Du Bois, but authors like Lucy Terry, who was one of the oldest known pieces of African-American literature, where she was enslaved in Deerfield, Massachusetts, and she wrote the ballad after an Indian attack that took place there. Of course, you have Phyllis Wheatley, you have Jupiter Hammond, you know, William Wells Brown. We have a lot of great, prominent authors, novelists, playwrights that just I want to take that time here to talk about those. So the format may be a little bit switched up sometimes, but pretty much what we'll do is I'll either pick a book or a piece that we'll be going through over the next few episodes, and I'll read through those pieces as well as give you my thoughts, because hey, this is Black Art is Lit with Nick, right? So to give you an idea, so a little bit of something what that would look like, one of the first ones, I guess, we can go through here. So if we was to go through Spunk, which is a short story that was written by Zora Neale Hurston. Its first publication was in The Opportunity, which was a literary magazine, a journal of Negro life, in June 1925. This piece was published there as a short story. She actually had won an award for it at the Literary Awards. So here's the intro of Spunk by Zora Neale Hurston. A giant of a brown-skinned man sauntered up the one street of the village and out onto the palmetto thickets with a small, pretty woman clinging lovely to his arm. "Look at there, folks," cried Elijah Moses, slapping his leg gleefully. "There they go, big as life and brassy as tacks." All the loungers in the store tried to walk to the door with an air of nonchalance, but with small success. "Now people," Walter Thomas gasped, "will you look at him?" "But that's one thing I likes about Spunk Bates. He ain't scared of nothing on God's green footstool. Nothing. He rides that log down at sawmill just like he struts round with another man's wife. Just don't give a kitty. When Tess Miller got cut to giblets on that circle saw, Spunk steps right up and starts riding. The rest of us were scared to go near it. A round-shouldered figure in overalls much too large came nervously to the door and the talking ceased. The men looked at each other and winked. "Give me some soda water," spats Billen, "I reckon." The newcomer ordered and stood far down the counter near the open pig feet tub to drink it. Elijah nudged Walter and turned with mock gravity to the newcomer. "Say, Joe, how's everything up your way? How's your wife?" Joe started and all but dropped the bottle he held in his hands. He swallowed several times painfully and his lips trembled. "Aw, Lig, you oughtn't to do nothing like that," Walter grumbled. Elijah ignored him. "She just passed here a few minutes ago, going that away," with a wave of his hand in the direction of the woods. Now, Joe knew his wife had passed that way. He knew that the men lounging in the general store had seen her. Moreover, he knew that the men knew he knew. He stood there silent for a long moment, staring blankly with his Adam's apple twitching nervously up and down his throat. One could actually see the pain he was suffering in his eyes, his face, his hands, and even the dejected slump of his shoulders. He set the bottle down upon the counter. He didn't bang it. Just ease it out of his hand silently and fiddle with his suspender buckle. "Well, I'm going after her today. I'm going and fetch her back. Spunk's done gone too far." He reached deep down into his trouser pocket and threw out a hollow ground razor, large and shiny, and passed his moistened thumb back and forth over the edge. "Talking like a man, Joe. Course that's your family affairs, but I like to see grit in anybody." Joe Canty laid down a nickel and stumbled into the street. Dust crept in from the woods. Ike Clark lit the swinging oil lamp that was almost immediately surrounded by candle flies. The men laughed boisterously behind Joe's back as they watched him shamble woodward. "You oughtn't to say what you done did to him, Lig. Look how it worked him up," Walter chided. "And I hope it worked him up good. Tain't even decent for a man to tank and do like he does. Spunk will sure kill him. Aw, I don't know. You never can tell. He might turn him up and spank him for getting in the way. But Spunk wouldn't shoot no unarmed man. That razor he carry out of here ain't gonna run Spunk down and cut him. And Joe ain't got the nerve to go up to Spunk with it knowing he totes that Army 45. He makes that break out of here to bluff us. He gonna hide that razor behind the first likely palmetto root and sneak back home to bed. Don't tell me nothing about that rabbit foot colored man. Didn't he meet Spunk and Lena face to face one day last week and mumble something to Spunk about letting his wife alone? What did Spunk say? Walter broke in. I like him fine, but tang the right way he carries on with little Candy. Just cause Joe's timid about fighting. You wrong there, Walter. Tain't because Joe's timid at all. It's because Spunk wants Lena. If Joe was a passel or wildcat, Spunk would tackle the job just the same. He'd go after anything he wanted that way. As I was saying a minute ago, he told Joe right to his face that Lena was his. Call her, he says to Joe. Call her and see if she'll come. A woman knows her boss and she answers when he calls. Lena, I ain't child your husband. Joe sort of whines out. Lena looked at him real disgusted, but she didn't answer, and she didn't move out of her tracks. Then Spunk reached out and takes hold of her arm and says, Lena, you's mine. From now on, I works for you and fights for you, and I never want you to look at nobody for a crumb of bread, a stitch, a close, a shingle to go over your head, but me as long as I live. I'll get the lumber for our house tomorrow. Go home and get your things together. That's my house, Lena speaks up. Papa, give me that. Well, says Spunk, don't give up with yours. But when you's outside, don't forget you's mine. And let no other man get out of his place with you. Lena looked at him with her eyes so full of love that they was running over. And Spunk seen it. Joe seen it, too. And his lips started to tremble. And his Adam's apple was galloping up and down his neck like a racehorse. I bet he's wore out half a dozen Adam apples since Spunk's been on the job with Lena. That's all he'll do. He'll be back here after a while swallowing and working his lips like he wants to say something and can't. But he didn't do nothing to stop him. Nope. Not a frazzling thing just stood there. Spunk took Lena's arm and walked off like nothing had happened, and he stood there gazing after them till they was out of sight. Now you know a woman don't want no man like that. I'm just waiting to see what he's gonna say when he gets back. But Joe Canty never came back. Never. The men in the store heard the sharp report of a pistol somewhere distant in a palmetto thicket, and soon Spunk came leisurely walking back with his black Stetson set at the same rackish angle, clinging with Lena clinging to his arm, came walking right into the general store. Lena wept in a frightened manner. Well, Spunk announced calmly, Joe came out there with a Medex and made me kill him. He sent Lena home and led the men back to Joe. Joe crumbled and limped with his right hand still clutching his razor. See my back? My clothes cut clear through. He snuck up and tried to kill me from the back, but I got him. And got him good. First shot, Spunk said. The men glared at Elijah accusingly. Take him up and plant him in Stony Lonesome. Spunk said in a careless voice. I didn't want to shoot him, but he made me do it. He's a dirty coward jumping on a man from behind. Spunk turned on his heel and sauntered away to where he knew his love, weapon, fear for him, and no man stopped him. At the general store later on, they all talked of locking him up until the sheriff could come from Orlando, but no one did anything but talk. Clear case of self-defense, the trial was a short one, and Spunk walked out of the courthouse to freedom again. He could work again, ride the dangerous log carriage that fed the swinging, snarling, biting circle saw. He could stroll the dark, soft, dark lanes with his guitar. He was free to roam the woods again. He was free to return to Lena. He did all of these things. What you reckon, Walt? Elijah asked one night later. Spunk's getting ready to marry Lena. No. Why, Joe ain't had time to get cold yet. Now, I didn't figure Spunk was the marrying kind. Well, he is, rejoined Elijah. He done moved most of Lena's things and her along with him over to the Bradley house. He's buying it. Just like I told you, all right in here the night Joe was killed. Spunk's crazy about Lena. He don't want folks to keep on talking about her. That's the reason he's rushing so. Funny thing about that bad cat, wasn't it? What bobcat, Lee? Ain't heard about none. Ain't you? Well, night before last was the first night Smunk and Lena moved together, and just as they was going to bed, a big black bobcat, black all over, you hear me, black, walked around and around the house and howled like 40, and when Spunk got his gun and went to the window to shoot it, he says it stood right up and looked him in the eye and howled right at him. The thing got Spunk so nervous, stuck, he couldn't even shoot. But Spunk says 'twasn't no bobcat no how. He says it was Joe done snuck back from hell. Sniff Walter. He ought to be nervous after what he done. I reckon Joe came back to dare him to marry Lena or to come out and fight. I bet he'll be back time and again, too. Know what I think? Joe was a braver man than Spunk. There was a general shout of derision from the group. That's a fact, went on Walter. Look it. What he done took a razor and went out to fight a man he know toted a gun and was a crack shot too? Nothing, not another thing. Joe was scared of Spunk. Scared plumb stiff. But he went just the same. It took him a long time to get his nerve up. Tain't nothing for Spunk to fight when he ain't scared of nothing. Now Joe's done come back to have it out with the man that's got all he ever had. Now I know Joe ain't never had nothing, no one or nothing besides Lena. It must have been haunting him, cause ain't nobody never seen no black bobcat. Another thing, cut in one of the men. Spunk was cussing a blue streak today, cause he loathed that saw was wobbling, almost get him once. The machinist come, looked it over and said it was alright. Spunk must have been leaning towards it some. Then he claimed somebody pushed him, but 'twasn't nobody close to him. I was glad when knocking off time come. I'm scared of that man when he gets hot. He beat you full of buttonholes as quick as he's looking at you. The men gathered the next evening in a different mood. No laughter. Nothing this time. Look, Lidge, you gonna set it up with Spunk? No, I reckon not, Walter. Tell you the truth, I'm a little bit skittish. Spunk died too wicked. Died cussing, he did. You know he thought he was done out of life. Good Lord, who'd he think done it? Joe? Joe Canty, how come? Walter, I believe I will walk up that away and set. Lena would like it, I reckon. But what did he say, Lid? Elijah did not answer until they left the lighted store and were strolling down the dark street. I was loading the wagon with scatting right near the saw when Spunk fell out on the carriage before I could go get him off the saw. Got him in the body, awful sight. Me and Skip Miller got him off, but it was too late. Anybody could see that. The first thing he said was, he pushed me, Lig. The dirty hound pushed me in the back. He was spitting blood at every breath. We laid him on a sawdust pile with his face to the east so he could die easy. He half my hen till the last. Walter and said, it was Joe, Lig. The dirty sneak shoved me. He didn't dare come to my face. But I'll get the son of a wood loose soon as I get in hell and make it too hot for him. I feel him shove me. That's how he died. If spirits can fight, there's a powerful tussle going on somewhere over Jordan. Cause I believe Joe's ready for Spunk and ain't scared anymore. Yes, I believe Joe pushed him myself. They had arrived at the house. Lena's lamentations were deep and loud. Chip filled the room with magnolia blossoms that gave off a heavy, sweet odor. The keepers of a wake tipped in whispering and frightened tones. Everyone in the village was there, even old Jeff Canty, Joe's father, who a few hours before would have even been afraid to come within 10 feet of him, stood leering triumphantly down upon the fallen giant as if his fingers had been the teeth of steel that laid him low. The cooling board consisted of 3 16-inch boards on sawhorses. A dingy sheet was his shroud. The women ate heartily of the funeral baked meats and wondered who would be Lena's next. The men whispered coarse conjectures between guzzles of whiskey. The end. So that was Spunk, a short story by Zora Neale Hurston. And one of the great things, so with this story, you know, Zora was originally from Notasoga, Alabama. But when she was really young, her family moved to Eatonville, Florida. And for the remainder of her life and after, she would go on to claim Eatonville, Florida as her home. And, you know, in the Eatonville was the first African-American town that was created. And so I was very proud of it. So when I was reading this tale, and I could easily see this happening in a early, you know, Eatonville, our early town that hasn't been fully established. I can, when you talk about lighting the old street light, like, yeah, we used to have old street lights. I definitely can't picture that in a modern society, but I can see that. I can see the men that's in the general store, you know, and, you know, it's a really quick tell, but one is powerful. You know, you have a man that's taking another man's woman, and not only are you taking her, but you are flaunting around town with her. You pretty much snatched her right from under him, you know? And so I feel like, and especially one of the other things that I like about this tale is, in Eatonville and in African-American culture, our African culture, we talk about spirits a lot, you know. So in this tale, and especially with Zora, and as I explore more her work here on Black Artist Lit, you'll hear talks of Zora Hurston or talks of spirituality or spirits within our texts. So here we talked about Joe dying and then coming back as a bobcat, or his spirit pushing Spunk to death, you know. So that was really interesting. Definitely love the tale, and there's lots more, but that's pretty much what this podcast will look like. You know, we'll talk and go through different texts and stuff. And for those that don't know, Zora Neale Hurston was an anthropologist, author, playwright, filmmaker. Here's the thing I tell people all the time. She was born 1891, 1901, 1910 as well, because she changed the times that she was actually born according to who she would talk to. And the truth of the matter is, she actually was born January 7th, 1891 in Notasoga, Alabama. And then again, her family moved over to Eatonville, Florida. And still today, in Eatonville, Florida, they have the Zora Festival, which is held each year in her honor. Zora passed away January 28th, 1960 in Fort Pierce, Florida. So, thank you very much for joining us at Black Art is Lit. You can follow us on Instagram at Black Art is Lit, or you can follow me at Nikira, N-Y-K-I-E-R-I-A. Thank you. Have a good day.